I'm Julie Burstein in today for Leonard Lopate. On our first Underreported, we look at a joint military offensive against a group called the Lord's Resistance Army, which has been underway in the Democratic Republic of Congo since last autumn. The conflict has ravaged parts of the country and created a dire situation for civilians, many of whom have been forced to flee their homes. We'll look at the humanitarian crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo and neighboring countries with Bruno Yochum, Director of Operations for Doctors Without Borders in Geneva, Switzerland, and on a satellite phone with Alexandra Morane, a project coordinator with the organization in southern Sudan. Welcome to both of you to WNYC. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Yes, that's right. It's a different time for all of us, I guess, because we're speaking across the whole world. Bruno, do we know how many Congolese have been internally displaced by this recent round of fighting?
Well, yes. The estimation today is that more or less 320,000 civilians have been displaced since November, December last year, and about 30,000 of them have been refugees on the Sudanese side.
Why are refugees coming to Sudan? I mean, for those of us here, Sudan seems like a place that one might not seek refuge.
Well, the attacks that are taking place are extremely close to the border of Sudan. And I would say civilians are today going in all directions, trying to flee the areas where they're unsecure. Most of them going inside Congo, of course, but others going to the Central African Republic and to Sudan.
Alexandra, can you describe for us what you see from where you are in southern Sudan?
Yeah, sure. Actually, we are testimony of a lot of displacement of people, and we are working in the south of Sudan, just close to the border of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And we also have some activities close to the border with Central Africa. And basically what I would like to underline is that there's a big big displacement of people in those three areas, which is Congo, Central Africa, and South Sudan, and which is affecting a lot of people. And those people are moving to South Sudan for refugees, basically fleeing the violence in Congo. And all those violence are moving for the West.
I don't know whether either of you know a play that's currently in New York called Ruined, which explores the stories of women who have lived through previous eras of violence. I just saw it this week, and when I learned that I was going to be speaking with both of you, it felt so tragic that this does not seem like a new story for this area of Africa.
Well, I mean, indeed, it's the whole of Eastern Congo, Northern Uganda, Southern Sudan, Central African Republic have been heavily impacted by war in the past decades. I think what's specific about the situation today of the displaced fleeing the Lord's Resistance Army is that only 7 or 8 months ago, it was quite a peaceful region with very few attacks. And a cycle of violence and retaliation has been opened following the joint military offensive against the movement organized by the Ugandan forces, the Congolese forces, and this has triggered extremely violent retaliations against civilians by the Lord's Resistance Army. So it's basically a situation which is spiraling out of control and which is becoming a regional conflict.
What kind of challenges, Alexandra, does Doctors Without Borders and your colleagues, what do you face when operating at the edges of the DRC and Sudan?
To tell you the truth, one of the biggest challenge is the security, is the access to the population. This is what we are asking, to have a humanitarian corridor. And I think it's something that we have to take into account. It's obviously there are some violence from the LRA, but there is also a big lack of protection of the population and even the humanitarian actors who can't access to this population in the south of Sudan. And we are facing this every day. I just came today to a refugee camp, and the people are still with a lot of fear of new attack, because those groups are still moving and are unpredictable. It's very difficult to ensure the security for everybody. And it's for us a big concern in terms of preparation, because we have the capacity to respond to health care and also to mental health care, with support for the people who've been traumatized by the violence, and which is one of the main components of our activities. But the problem is to access to those people, and many people are evacuated from different places because of insecurity.
I was going to ask you about the trauma, because I can imagine that the emotional responses to what's happening there among these refugees must be very, very difficult for them. And is it difficult for you also to offer support and consolation in a way to these people?
It is indeed very difficult. And let me express the fact that in general, the African people are very strong people. And I think it's amazing to see how they can answer to those violence. They are affected, but they suffer some very, very difficult situation where they lose most of their family members, where they don't have any news about their child, about their wife, and they have to displace. All the village has been burned. They are lacking food, they are lacking access to health, they still live with fear, and it's a very difficult situation. And even for us, it's not easy, because we are working in this place where there is some security, so it is not an easy situation. And I think in the news, we always talk about Darfur in Sudan, but I think we just forget about this conflict, which is affecting three countries, and which is displacing just in the south of Sudan more than 100,000 people, between the refugees and the displaced people, which is massive.
Bruno, you mentioned that the catalyst for this may have been the concerted effort against the Lord's Resistance Army by the various armies. What is the Lord's Resistance Army, and where are they from?
Well, the Lord's Resistance Army is a rebel movement which appeared in northern Uganda in the 80s, which was long based in the in northern Uganda, and it led to a very similar situation. Because of the fighting between the LRA and the army, populations had to flee the rural areas and find refuge in towns, etc. And until very recently, and what happened is that this movement is extremely mobile, and it then sought refuge in South Sudan, which was used as a rear base for several years. And after the peace agreement was signed in Sudan in 2005, it moved on to northern Congo, where it established bases in a national park very close to the Sudanese border. And the peace talks took place And what happened is that after the collapse of these talks, the military option was chosen. And we have a presence as Doctors Without Borders in the Owele since several years. And what we see is there were, I would say, regular attacks before in 2007, 2008, but we were talking about 2, 3, 4 per month.
Mm.
Since the offensive has taken place, which is ongoing, we're talking about 50 attacks per month.
And these are...
It means it's been multiplied by 10.
Wow.
There were very few displaced a few months ago. Now we have 300,000. So I would say there's no question about the responsibilities of the LRA in the violences, but I would say the responsibilities should be considered globally.
In a situation like this, for your workers who are there, how it sounds like it's a constantly shifting situation. How do you train people to be able to manage in a situation that changes every minute in terms of what's happening?
Well, I think our teams go through, I would say, extensive briefings, and the difficulties today in this situation is that basically 60-70% of the population is inaccessible. They are simply not assisted. Our teams are generally based in, I would say, hubs where the security is better than elsewhere, and they try to do their best from these hubs. But simply moving out of these hubs to evacuate wounded a few tens of kilometers away, for example, we cannot do it by road, so we have to use planes. 2 days ago, we used a plane to evacuate 3 wounded from a village which was just 40 kilometers away from our base. So there are big frustrations. Our teams are experimented, are briefed also about the risks, and it demands constant monitoring.
Alexandra, where you are, you talked about, and Bruno, you also, about the challenges of security. Where can you seek help for security? Who helps provide that for you when you are able to go and rescue these wounded?
Well, basically,
it's not an easy thing. We have the UN agency who's in the area, and we do have different plan of evacuation in different cases, by road or by air, with helicopters, with plane. There are different measures that we are looking for our team when we move, and to tell the truth, is something that we assess every day. And it's more using a network, and the population is really helpful for this, because we basically it's being in contact and knowing what is going on, and each time to make sure that we can access to this place. But it's every day a challenge for everybody.
Bruno, yes, you were going to say something.
Yeah, maybe if I can add a word, I would say that the very paradox of this situation is that security in the different towns, especially in Congo, is very much dependent on the positioning of the Congolese armed forces, the United Nations armed forces, etc., to basically deter potential attacks. But the paradox is, on one hand, it is this presence which offers security, but on the other hand, there is a direct involvement in the offensive, which is itself at the origin of the cycle of violence. And I would say that this is the paradox in the field we're facing.
When you look at this paradox, and you're now speaking to an audience sitting in New York and people who are accessing the Leonard Lopate Show from other places, but I listen to you and think, well, it sounds so challenging for you on the ground, and the question that I have is what can we as individuals do, and what can governments do to try to change the situation so people are no longer being attacked?
Well, I think as a medical organization, we don't pretend we are the ones that have solutions to such deep political problems as the ones we're facing. But what we can say is that one of the key criteria for humanitarian workers to be able to assist populations is the strict separation between their work and, I would say, political or military objectives of the international community. This is what protects us, not only in Congo, but in most conflict contexts. And we have seen over the past few years a movement which tends to, I would say, yeah, subordinate humanitarian action to wider political or military objectives, and this is quite a dangerous trend. Otherwise, there is a need for the public, for the citizens, etc., to continue supporting organizations, to continue supporting the different initiatives to help populations. It's absolutely indispensable, and it's especially for independent organizations.
Well, thank you so much, Bruno Yocum, Director of Operations for Doctors Without Borders, and Alexandra Morane, who is a project coordinator for the organization, who is in southern Sudan today. Thank you for talking to us about this very difficult situation, this crisis in the Congo.
You're welcome.
Thank you.